It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. When William Scranton ran for the Republican nomination for president in 1964 and lost to Barry Goldwater by a 4-1 margin, Theodore H. White wrote in his book, The Making of the President, 1964, "It is impossible to consider the short-lived Scranton campaign as a serious exercise in politics, but as an exercise in gallantry, it may have saved the soul of the Republican Party." William Scranton died Sunday of a cerebral hemorrhage at an assisted living facility in Montecito, California. He was 96. Scranton served as a U.S. congressman representing the city named after his family and served as governor of Pennsylvania from 1963 to 1967. Joining us now to look at the life and legacy of William Scranton is Terry Madonna, director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. Terry Madonna, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
William Scranton was on the cover of Time magazine in October of 1962 when he was running for governor. And he's seen in that photo wearing a dark suit and tie with the brill-creamed hair. And he looks like he could have been a character right out of Mad Men. What kind of a guy...
That's a great description, by the way. That's wonderful.
What kind of a guy was William Scranton?
Well, he was, as they used to say, born to the manor, M-A-N-O-R, meaning born to wealth and privilege, and had a sense of what we would have called 40 years ago, political historians like myself, a sense of noblesse oblige, meaning that it was the obligation of those who were well off materially, you know, those who we might call the patrician class, to serve, to make a commitment to public life, which he did very, very early on in his career. Now, make no mistake about it, when he got out of Yale, after he graduated from Yale and then went to law school, he got involved in family business, including banking, and you know, his family at one time was worth an estimated $50 million. And we're talking about 50 years ago, so you can imagine what that would translate into now. Early on in his career, I think he made a commitment to public service and, you know, ran for Congress, served one term. And during that term, he was approached by Republican leaders to seek the governorship in a rare moment when Republican political leaders could agree that the one thing they didn't want to happen was to lose control for the third straight election of the governorship of the state, put aside all of their differences, and urge Governor, then Congressman Scranton, one-term member of Congress, to seek the governorship. We can talk a little bit about his broad views. He was a moderate
Republican. Terry, I wanted to jump in because before we get into what he did as governor, I had never heard this term before, but Scranton was described as a Kennedy Republican when he served in Congress. How did he earn that particular moniker?
Well, let me tell you just a side story. He dated Kathleen Kennedy briefly. I don't think it has to do with his positions, but he knew John Kennedy. They were born in the same year, and he dated Kathleen Kennedy very briefly. But moving on to more serious matters.
But he admired JFK, apparently, or at least his
immensely,
position.
Immensely. Yeah. He voted, you know, more than half the time for the Kennedy agenda when he was a member of Congress. He supported the war on poverty. He supported particularly civil rights, which, as you know, Kennedy supported, which wasn't realized legislatively until the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 1964. So he was essentially a Republican who believed that government should play a role in helping people, in ensuring an end to racism, ensuring that civil liberties were protected, that the government had a role to play. Obviously, you know, very different than, you know, we see with some Republicans and some Democrats today, but that was, and essentially, he had he thought that government could be used as an instrument for good, and as such, during his public career, demonstrated that.
And as governor of Pennsylvania, he did things that we wouldn't normally associate with a Republican, raising taxes of all things.
Yeah, sales tax went from 4% to 5%, leaving the state with the highest sales tax in the country, exempt, of course, food and clothing. But now, in all fairness, we had no income tax, so our relative tax burden, overall state tax burden to other states, was low. But make no mistake about it, he has been described in some columns I read recently as a fiscal conservative. I don't think that's an accurate description. He was not opposed to raising taxes, as you accurately point out. He also increased spending during his 4 years, state spending by 40%, and increased the indebtedness, meaning the borrowing that the state did, considerably. So he was not a fiscal conservative. He believed that if taxes were necessary to raise in order to fund what he would consider to be the important functions of government, he was quite prepared to do it.
We're talking with Terry Madonna, who is the director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College, about the late governor of Pennsylvania, William Scranton. What were the overall accomplishments of Scranton's term as governor of Pennsylvania? And this was, of course, at a time when the governors were limited to just one term or 4 years in office.
That's correct. And just as a background, for the first 2 years, he had a slim control over both houses of the legislature. And I think everyone understands, your listeners understand how important that is. In his second 2 years, he had a split legislature. So in his 4 years, he had to, at times, convince Democrats that, you know, they should pursue his agenda as well as Republicans. Okay, let's go through the list. Let's take economic development. He firmly believed that the economy of the state had to diversify. So as a result of that, he worked on a variety of economic development programs, including increasing the borrowing capacity of the state's industrial authority, including as well doing what he could to expand the old industries of the state, such as coal, and worked on international trade, something that, as you know, today governors of states do routinely, you know, traveling abroad, taking trips in order to try to beef up trade and commerce within the state of Pennsylvania from abroad. Industrial and economic development were key facets of his administration. Importantly, diversify the economy. The second thing that I think he's noted for was education. The community college system was, in a sense, put into place, if we can actually call it a system, with a funding mechanism. Under his leadership, the Department of Education became a much stronger institution, along with the formation of a department with a state board of education, in order to focus attention more on the educational needs of the Commonwealth. He increased spending for education, gave teachers the first raise they had had in a number of years. So education was a second. The third was his commitment to strengthen local government through the creation of the Department of Community Affairs in order to strengthen and revitalize local governments. So, Paul, the list goes on and on. And remember, as you accurately point out, this is all done in 4 years.
Right.
Right? Four short years. And in one of them, at least for several months, he was running for the presidency of the United States.
Right, and I want to get into that, because the assassination of President Kennedy, whom he knew and admired, happened just 10 months into Scranton's term, and the rise of Barry Goldwater as a candidate for the GOP nomination for president drew Scranton into the presidential race. Why did he want to challenge Goldwater?
Yeah, well, first of all, he really disagreed with Senator Goldwater's approach. He disagreed with his positions in Congress. Of course, he had been in the House when Barry Goldwater was in the Senate. He disagreed with Goldwater's opposition to the war on poverty, but importantly, he disagreed with Senator Goldwater on the Civil Rights Act. Goldwater had put up a cloture vote in a, you know, interpreted to mean he would oppose civil rights. And that was the last straw for Bill Scranton. And he wasn't, I think, overly anxious to run by all indications. There were other liberals in the race, in particular liberal Republicans, namely Nelson Rockefeller, governor of New York, but Rockefeller's campaign wasn't going very far. So at one point he went and visited Dwight Eisenhower, of course, from Harrisburg to Gettysburg, just a short little, half-hour drive. And they had a meeting, and it's apparent now that Bill Scranton sort of misinterpreted what Ike was trying to say to him and thought Ike was encouraging him to run. They later had a conversation where Ike told Scranton that it was probably a hopeless case, that Goldwater had the nomination wrapped up not to divide the party. But at any rate, Scranton decides, mostly because of his opposition to what Goldwater stood for, to run for office, to run for the Republican nomination, rather, and he decides to run literally almost a month before the Republican nomination was to take place at their convention in San Francisco. So he literally has no time, Paul, to prepare, no time to put a campaign together. Probably 600 delegates had already lined up behind Goldwater, and it was one of those efforts that were more idealistic. But right. Here's the catch in this.
Sure.
Go ahead. Now, here's the catch in this. Three national polls that I could find in a book that I wrote on the presidential Pennsylvanians in presidential politics, three national polls showed him ahead among the voters. But remember, nominations in those days were not about the voters. Delegates were still pretty much selected by political bosses of the various states in, you know, closed door meetings.
Right. The situation didn't change until later conventions. We're just about, Terry, we're just about out of time, but there's one more thing I wanted to get into about William Scranton, who has been described as a man of integrity, a man who said what he honestly thought and felt. And this was never more evident than when President Nixon asked Scranton to chair a commission on campus unrest following the shooting of four students at Kent State during a protest in 1970. And Scranton did not come to the conclusions Nixon and his vice president, Spiro Agnew, were counting on.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, he really didn't want to get into the blame game. He wanted to assess and talk about how people needed to sit down and have conversations about their problems. And he didn't want some lurch to the right, some immediate and sharp reaction about what happened at Kent State. Fact of the matter was, as you point out, that was the hallmark of his career, a sensible guy who could sit down and chat with people, regardless of their background, who constantly worked for compromise, who was not shrill, who had a way about him, a manner about him that was, you know, you could tell he was, as you know, born into wealth, make no mistake about it. But he actually felt a clear understanding of how important government was to help people. And I think helping people was primarily the fundamental reason he got into government in the first place.
Talking about the legacy of William Scranton, Terry Madonna, our guest. He is the director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. Terry Madonna, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll look at the expanding role of community colleges. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.